each mouth chattering incessantly to its companion as they rolled like wheels over the earth. Zeus grew weary of the power of these people and split them apart with his thunderbolts. They turned into humans as we know them today, who walk around on two legs and speak with only one mouth. And so it is that love came to exist, the playwright claimed, each of us seeking our other half. I laughed when I heard this. I had been present at the beginning of the world, and it wasn't anything like that. It is a pretty story, though nothing could be further from the truth for Psyche and me. There is no pretending that we were two parts of some cosmic whole. She was a mortal woman, and I a god when we first met, each fierce in our independence. We were not severed halves. We were complete unto ourselves. It is possible that our paths would never have crossed at all had it not been for a chance mistake. There is something powerful in this, I think. We were not enthralled to destiny or fate, but merely the weight of our own choices. When we turned towards each other like flowers facing the sun, we were not fulfilling some prophecy or old story. We were writing our own.
Chapter 1. Psyche. Despite my unusual destiny, I began life as an ordinary infant, born like any other to a rush of blood and cries of joy. Though in my case, these were followed by more than a bit of confusion. My mother and father were the king and queen of a kingdom in rocky Greece called Mycenae. When my mother, Astadamia, learned that she was with child, my father, Alcaeus, left the Mycenaean capital of Tiryns and set off across the mountains. He passed through desolate valleys and rode beneath craggy cliffsides populated by nesting griffins, until at last he came to gates that bore the words, "Know thyself." It wasn't in his own fate he sought to learn at the Oracle of Delphi, but his unborn child's. Mine. Would I be born healthy and strong? What would I grow up to become? When my father entered the Oracle's shadowy earthen chamber, two things struck him. The first was the smell of the place, redolent of sulfur and other scents less recognizable. The second was the sight of the woman who sat on a bronze tripod suspended over an abyss. She wore a peplos robe that swathed her body in folds of yellow fabric, and her hair was bound up in a neat braid around her head. This was the Oracle, and she stared at Alcaeus with eyes out of time. My father shivered. He was a king and used to people trying to wheedle favors from him, but this woman wanted nothing from anyone. A priest from the order that had sprung up around the Oracle whispered the king's question in her ear. She sat back and drank in the vapors rising up from the cracks in the earth. These were said to be sent from Apollo himself, god of prophecy, and brought true visions of the future. A tremor ran through the Oracle. She began to speak in an unearthly voice, one that did not belong to the body of such a delicate woman. My father could not recognize the language she spoke, but the priests were already scribbling on their clay tablets, performing the complex calculations needed to interpret the messages of the Oracle. Gods do not always speak in ways that are easy for mortals to understand, but fortunately, the white-bearded priests knew how to translate. At last, they bestowed the Oracle's prophecy upon my father. Your child will conquer a monster feared by the gods themselves. My father was ecstatic. His son would be a hero. Alcaeus had long mourned that he did not share the heroic gifts of his father, Perseus, but sometimes these things skip a generation. His son would be a monster killer, a hero, and people would come from all across Greece to pay homage to him. What a pity that I was no son. When the midwife handed me to my father on the day of my birth, he wouldn't have been more shocked